As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager. Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point-of-sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. Shopify.com/theathletic.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to The Athletic Support, your podcast on the Montreal Canadiens by TheAthletic.com. I'm Marc-Antoine Godin on this Monday, January 9th, 2023. Arpin Basu, I wish you a Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you. Our first episode of the new year. Yeah. Happy New Year to all our listeners. Thanks for letting us take a little break. We needed a break. We were kind of away from the team for a while, and so here we are. We're back, 2023. We're back on the beat. Canadiens actually played tonight, this being Monday, against the Kraken. They're coming off their first win in roughly 7 months on Saturday against the St. Louis Blues. But they're also hitting the halfway point of this season, which, you know, generally leads to some sort of reflection. I believe we're going to be speaking to the general manager, Ken Hughes, at some point to get his thoughts on what the team's been like through the first half. But, you know, what do you, you know, because we really kind of had like a tale of two half seasons, I suppose. But, you know, like
that makes
first
a whole
quarter,
season, man.
Yeah, that's it. It's like a first quarter and a second quarter that were really quite different. Yeah. And so when you look at those two differences, where do you kind of land on how the season's going and what this team is?
Well, when you look at the standings, they are exactly where I expected them to be. But when you look at that first quarter and second quarter, I think that there's a trap there to look at the beginning of the season and the way hockey is played, the more run and gun type of hockey in October, and it even delved into November a little bit this year. And the Canadians had a relative amount of success playing that style and benefiting from the fact that other teams probably did not have as tight a structure as they have now. So in that sense, I don't think that they were as good as the as what they showed in the first quarter. But to this day, you'll still have players say, well, you know, we'll come back to playing the way that we can, that we know we can play and how good we know we can be, et cetera, referring to that early some sort of success. But and then the second quarter, we were expecting, whether it was on the ice statistically or whatever, but we were all expecting that there would be some sort of regression at some point. And it came down, boy, with it was painful to watch at times.
With a sledgehammer.
With a sledgehammer, for sure. So ultimately, I don't think that the team was as bad. They were not destined to be pounced the way they've been for a couple of weeks to 82 in an 82 game season. So you sort of average the two, and you look at them being 27th overall in the rankings at the, you know, in the NHL rankings, and if you take it by point percentage, well, they're exactly the same place, so that's it doesn't change much in that sense. But I think that they are what's the line from the NFL coach? They are who we thought they are.
Yeah, they were who we thought they were.
That's it.
That's pretty much it. I mean, my kind of take is, I kind of feel like the Canadians need to pick a lane to some extent. Like they're really trying to have the luxury of being competitive on the ice, developing young players, positioning themselves for the draft. Like they kind of want to do a little bit of everything, right? Yeah. And it's become somewhat evident that it's difficult to do all those things at once. So if you look at the whole first half of the season, in a way, they have done all those things just at different times. So beginning of the season, they're competitive. Guys are feeling good about themselves. Young players are getting reps, minutes. Kirby Dach is able to find his game and become like an important part of this team. Suzuki and Caulfield have the success that they had. And they're winning games. They feel good. And even for the coach, even for Martin St. Louis, you know, getting some confidence in himself as well. Like we tend to forget that he's developing too as a coach. So,
yeah.
And then, but that was to the detriment of positioning yourself for the draft, for building this team for the future. And I'm sure if management, if we gave, you know, Ken Hughes and Jeff Gorton truth serum, even though Jeff Gorton flatly denied this when we talked to him on his 1 year anniversary or near his 1 year anniversary with the team, I'm sure they would admit that being where they are in the standings now is preferable to where they were in the standings at the end of October or even in sort of early November. So it's like kind of, it's hard to do what the Canadians are trying to do, where they want to be competitive night after night. They have this mishmash of sort of veteran types that they would ideally like to move at some point, young players trying to push them, and get the development with the competitive play all at once. And I feel like this is a time, you know, seeing what happened over the first half of the season where the Canadians might just want to pick a lane. And if they're going to pick a lane, it would be the development lane, you know? And so this is what we're going to kind of talk about today as well. I actually unintentionally sort of segued into our main topic for today, which is just the whole furor, I don't know if furor is the right word, but there is definitely a heightened sensitivity among the fan base and for the coach when it comes to Juraj Slafkovský and what's going on with him, how he's being deployed, how he's being developed, whether he should be in Laval or in Montreal. And this comes back to that whole thing, pick your lane. And so either you're going to keep Juraj Slafkovský in Montreal, give him all the minutes he can handle, or give him a prominent role on the team. Or if not, send him to Laval, let him play major minutes there, top power play, top line, 20 plus minutes a game, you know, give him everything down there and let him sort of build up his game in the AHL. And there doesn't seem to be, at least in the discourse that I get on social media and just among the media themselves and among a lot of people, there doesn't seem to be anything in between those two things. And, you know, I feel like there is something in between those two things, and it's what we're witnessing. And so, you know, we thought we should sort of look at the notion of sending Slafkovský to Laval, with the caveat being that neither myself nor Marc-Antoine, and sorry to speak for you, actually think that's going to happen. Am I wrong in saying that?
No.
Speaking for you? Yeah. So it's probably not happening.
We could be wrong, but that's our sense.
That's our sense. And that's our sense for the near future. We're not going to predict what's going to happen for the rest of the season, but it's not imminent. There's nothing in the cards about Yaroslav Slafkovský going to Laval. From what we can gather, I think the organization and the coaching staff see a lot of benefits from what Slafkovský is getting right now at roughly 12 minutes a game, playing a top nine role, if not top six on most nights, frankly. And as Marte St. Louis loves to repeat, getting these valuable reps that you can't buy. But let's look at the alternative, even though we don't think it's going to happen. But, you know, because a lot of people do feel strongly, and I'm not saying those people are wrong, feel strongly that he should go to Laval.
Yeah.
So let's start why do you think, how would he benefit by going to Laval, in your opinion?
I think that there's a sense that he could have bolster his confidence, not only with more puck touches, but also in all likelihood with more production. So it's just regaining a sense of quote unquote domination, or, you know, or higher impact on games than what he's had so far this season. So I guess that would be the main argument.
Which is the pro of sending him to the World Juniors as well, right?
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Same similar approach, but with the fact that, you know, you can call him up at any time. He's still under the umbrella, under the supervision of the team on a daily basis. And he gets to be instantly, well, one of the best players on that team. So I think the people who want him down in Laval are probably feeling that he's either overmatched at the NHL level, or that he's not properly managed and his usage, whether it be, you know, moving from the fourth line to the second line, back to the fourth line, but mainly, you know, bottom six duties for sure. You know, averaging 12, 13 minutes a night, little bit of power play, but not necessarily a whole lot of it. And also being left on the bench at times in the third period when the team is trying to score a goal, is trying to play catch up. We've seen on numerous occasions Martin Saint-Louis shortening his bench and say, well, you know, he's going to he'll sit Slafkovský and really limit the number of his shifts just in an effort to win that game. And I think that resonates very well with what you were saying earlier when you were talking about the fact that the Canadiens had to pick a lane. I think that Martin Saint-Louis at times has been guilty of trying to win games and manage in a way that you would not necessarily win games at all costs, but winning a game comes at the expense necessarily of developing your good younger players, or exposing them to certain situations where they would benefit from those reps too. So ultimately I don't think that all that, even putting him at the American League level and telling him, you know what, go ahead and be one of the best players on your team, would be necessarily all that beneficial. You look at Cole Caulfield at the beginning of last season. He was sent to Laval in November. He had a dreadful start to the season in Montreal, was sent there, albeit just for a short period. He was there only for six games. but he did not come back as a rejuvenated player who all of a sudden, because he had scored a few goals, felt so much better about himself that it propelled him to, for the rest of the season. What propelled him was a change in, behind the bench and the fact that all of a sudden they managed to clean up the environment, clean up the atmosphere around the room. And to me, as long as the atmosphere surrounding Slafkovský is positive, I don't see the need to send him down and try to catch lightning, you know, and just by thinking that these a few goals with the Rocket would all of a sudden bring him to another level. You just have to, you know, he's like a plant. You just water the plant patiently, and ultimately at some point it's going to grow.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I'm going to be honest here. Like, this is our podcast. And so Marc-Antoine and I are very like-minded on this subject. So we wanted to give equal time to the pro sending Slafkovský to Laval, but it's not all that sincere. Because neither of us think that he should be sent to Laval. And both of us, I think, see the benefits of him just of just maintaining status quo with Juraj Slafkovský, of just going the way it's going. It's funny because everyone seems to be really sensitive about this, except for Juraj Slafkovský. He's the one guy who could not be happier right now. And it doesn't bother him. And it's funny, you mentioned him sitting, you know, late in games, either down a goal, up a goal, but in high leverage situations, late in games where the game is a win or a loss is at stake, you know, where these are important minutes, and sometimes he misses those shifts. So on Saturday night, you know, I hadn't covered a game in a long time, and I try to tend to not put fuel on this fire, but when Jonathan Drouin scored what we believed was his first goal of the season, turns out it's Josh Anderson's. Actually, it doesn't turn out. It was quite obvious at the time that it was Josh Anderson's goal. I don't know why they announced it as Jonathan Drouin's goal. It actually did him a great disservice, and it's really unfortunate. He talked after the game as if he had just scored his first goal in over a calendar year, Scott Gomez style, but it turned out not to be, and it should have been clear to everyone. Anyhow, sorry for the tangent there. But when that goal was scored, Drouin was on a line with Anderson and Dvorak, which was Juraj Slafkovský's line. He was in Juraj Slafkovský's spot. So when I noticed that, I tweeted, oh, the reason Jonathan Drouin got that goal is that Juraj Slafkovský has apparently been benched. Now, I try not to do that, and I try not to use that word unless it's actually happened. So I usually try to wait a couple of shifts at least. I didn't on this occasion. I should have, because Slafkovský was back on that line for the next shift. So basically he had missed a shift.
Yeah.
But the environment around him right now is that everyone saw that tweet, and even my own instinct to put it out was like, there's Slafkovský's, you know, he's been parked on the bench. Is that's where everyone else's mindset is when it comes to this player, when it comes to his development and how he's being used. And I got a lot of reaction on Twitter. Why has he been benched? This is wrong. It's unbelievable. Send him to Laval. This is stupid, blah, blah, blah. It just created this whole thing. I tried to fix it later by kind of tweeting, oh no, Slafkovský, another shift, you know, my bad. But it just kind of is a reflection of where I think the fan base is with him, is that the slightest hint that his development is somehow being impeded causes a great freakout, because, you know, there's a lot invested in this kid, number one overall pick. You know, they haven't had one in a long time. But Juraj Slafkovský himself has no issue with that. You know, I mean, he came out and spoke yesterday and was cool with it. Like, he's totally fine. He's loving life. You know, even Monday morning, you know, the morning skate, highly optional morning skate. Slafkovský is one of the only forwards out there, I think, with Pizzetta and Richard. So, you know, the three kind of the younger slash bubble sort of guys, but yeah. He's not even a bubble guy, Slafkovský. He hasn't been scratched. He hasn't been scratched all year. You know, he's missed some games to injury and suspension, but hasn't been scratched yet. So he's out there enjoying himself, laughing it up. Armia was out there too. At the end of practice, Montembeau needs some work. Who's shooting on him? Juraj Slafkovský. Super happy to do it. having fun with Alex Burrows, you know, and it's just these moments that are away from the spotlight where you kind of see the extent to which he's enjoying his experience. He's having fun with his teammates. He loves playing the game. He's very receptive to instruction. He enjoys learning and being in the NHL. You know, I mean, someone, I think he was asked if he was asked if he would like to go to the World Junior Championships, and he said he wasn't, and people found that strange. But to him, it wasn't, because he didn't want to go to the World Junior Championships. He'd much rather be in the NHL. And I think this is, and I understand the notion that, well, sometimes, you know, you don't just do what the player wants, but you have to be able to see if there are benefits, if he's benefiting from the current situation. I think it's pretty obvious that he is. And even though the production's not there, and even though the dominance isn't there, he's slowly, gradually learning how to get to that level. I mean, I think we underestimate the extent to which the combination of the smaller ice surface and the pace of the game in the NHL and how difficult it is to adapt to that. The problem with doing that in the AHL, which might be the argument, well, go learn to play on the smaller ice surface in the AHL. Well, they're not playing at the same pace.
No.
You know, it would be kind of like, you know, it would sort of be like, you know, to use sort of, I guess, a baseball analogy, would be like you face major league pitching, so 98 to 100 miles an hour with movement, versus AAA pitching, which is maybe 92 to 95, not as much movement, not as much command, and learning how to hit down there. It's a big jump. You know, it might sound small, but the pace of the game in the AHL, you are not going to learn how to play at NHL pace in the AHL.
No.
You can learn a whole bunch of other things. You can build your confidence. You can, all the things that you mentioned earlier, that's all valid. You know, getting power play time, doing all the, you know, being the man has its benefits, no doubt. But you're not going to learn NHL pace in the AHL. That's been proven time and time again. It's just like, it's something that you need to learn at the NHL level, because there's nothing like that. You can't replicate that in the AHL. And so he's learning these things, you know. It's you don't want him to learn how to, you don't want him to feel really good about himself facing 92 mile an hour fastballs that don't move and say, oh, look, I'm cranking homers, this is awesome. And then you go back up to the big leagues and you're whiffing on the 98 mile hour fastball that's coming in on your hands because you can't adjust. And so it's,
you got to see some pitches.
You got to see some pitches. Yeah, exactly. And you know, you're going to have trouble making contact at first, but eventually you're going to adjust. You're going to adjust to that pace, that velocity, and that movement, which in the NHL is basically the extent to which players can think as fast as they're playing. You know, I mean, it's the pace of the NHL game is not only the fact that the players are faster, like it's in their skating's faster, but it's the fact that they can think faster and they process faster. And that's what he's learning right now. And I think it's a very good, it's invaluable for him, because Martin Saint-Louis has been talking a lot of late, or the last couple of days, about the team's foundation, how their defensive zone play is the foundation of the team, and any successful winning team has that as a foundation. What they're doing with Juraj Slafkovský right now is building his foundation. And once that foundation is set, then you can start adding floors to the house. And the house will be on steady ground because of what he's experiencing right now.
My God, so many analogies. It's amazing.
A lot. I know. This is from listening to Martin Saint-Louis talk every day. It's the baseball analogy. He's always getting on base.
Yeah.
All his stuff that he mentions about baseball, and this foundation thing of late is his latest thing.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep. You heard that right. you can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Victorinox, the makers of the original Swiss Army knife, have been a reliable companion for life's everyday challenges, mastering functionality, innovation, iconic design, and uncompromising quality with its products. The Victorinox Swiss Army knife provides you with all the things you don't think about until you need it. Tweezers, a screwdriver, and even a corkscrew. With the Victorinox Swiss Army Knife, you can be prepared to master everyday life. You can find Victorinox Swiss Army Knives at Dick's Sporting Goods.
But you know, the other thing about Slafkovský too is that if the team was winning or playing well consistently, everybody was on board and doing fairly well, and he was the only one trailing, and you could tell that he was just literally out of his league, that might be a different matter. But now you could 100%. Say, well, he's a first overall pick and we wish he had a bigger impact, etc. And it's all about, at that point, it all becomes just, what are your own expectations as a fan or as a media towards this kid and towards the team, rather than reality. But when you look at the Canadians, night after night, there was, what, 6, 7, 8 guys that you could say, you know, that guy doesn't really have much of an impact on the team. And are you going to send them all down to Laval? No. But if you choose to send some guys to Laval, whether they're kids or they're ineffective veterans, that would go somewhere into what you were saying at the beginning of picking a lane. But it's not as if he's sticking out like a sore thumb in the middle of all that group. So I think that if he wasn't a first number one pick overall, and he was just some honest prospect that gets his first taste of the NHL, there would not be that much pressure on him. But to me, he's not overmatched at the NHL level any more than Yevgeny Dadonov has been this year, or heck, Mike Hoffman for the most part of the season, or Pizzetta, or a bunch of other guys. So I think that it's... Oh, and the other thing, too, is that people say, oh, they were... That whole discussion started at a point where the team was really going into a downhill spiral, losing games badly, and say, oh, let's protect him from all this losing.
Uh-huh.
That's BS. I mean, you cannot shelter a guy from a losing team and say, well, let's put him in a winning environment. I don't think that it does him any good. Uh-huh. And every team in the NHL, every player in the NHL at some point will live a skid like that. The Caulfield and Suzuki experienced it as early as last year, and they recovered. They're fine with it. I mean, this year they still have their challenges, but it's not as if it shakes you through your core and you never recover from it. So I think that,
well, as long as it's a limited stretch, you don't want an entire season of that.
No, but because the thing is, when it's an entire season of it, that's when it becomes toxic, and that's when the environment ceases to be beneficial to the player to develop. Uh-huh. But that's an entirely different debate. And if you compare, let's say, the losing from last year to the losing of this year, it's night and day. So yeah. In the sense that how the players are handling it, the atmosphere that they're able to keep in the room despite the losing. So I think that if you had put Slafkovský in last year's team, it would be a different story. If we were, let's say, look, we're recording this on January 9th, and we remember last year at the same time, Dominique Duchamp was still the coach of that team. The team had just come back from a dreadful holiday trip. If Slafkovský was struggling,
not so dissimilar to this one.
No, I know, but I mean, yeah. Remember they had like 4 NHLers. Everybody was out with COVID.
Yeah, yeah.
It was crazy.
Oh no, I remember. Cam Hill has played in the NHL. Yeah, it was Brandon Baddock. Brandon Baddock played in the NHL. There was a lot of unique
and the last thing,
moments.
Last things you mentioned Brandon Baddock because it's an interesting point too. There are concerns that Slafkovský, if he was to be sent to the American League, would have a target on his back. And this is something that I asked Jean-François Hull earlier in the year. The fact that they don't have guys like that anymore, like Bedek, to protect smaller players or younger players or players that could potentially have a target on their back. They don't have Bedek anymore. Pezzetta's in Montreal. Obviously, Xhaka has not seen a minute of AHL action. They don't have really anybody to quote-unquote protect Slafkovský if he was to go down there and be, you know, the target of dirtier hits than what he's accustomed at the NHL level. Do you think that it plays a part in any way?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think what's important to understand, well, first of all, when you mentioned let's get him out of this losing environment and put him in a winning environment, well, that doesn't describe Laval. Laval is not exactly a winning environment right now. They're playing better hockey than their record suggests, but they're last in their division in terms of points percentage. So it's not as if you're sending him to this great situation in Laval. If Laval were a top AHL team, which I think some of us might have assumed they would be better than this year, then yeah, maybe then that's a debate worth having. But it's not like you're taking him off a losing team and putting him on a winning team. No, you're taking him off a losing team to put him on a losing team at a lower level. So that's not, there's no benefit there. But there's definitely is something to what you said, is that the AHL has guys like Brandon Bedek and like several guys. I mean, it's a different league. And it's not sometimes is conducive to developing players. No doubt. It's development league. And there are guys who develop great in the AHL. The one guy that jumps to mind is Mikko Rantanen, who spent an extra year in Europe, came over, got his 9 games with the Avalanche. They decided, no, we're going to send you to the AHL. Had a great year in the AHL, came up in his rookie year, he scored 20 goals and has never looked back. So there are benefits. There are countless examples of people who went to the AHL despite the differences and built that foundation I was talking about before and moved on to the NHL and did great. But you know, the AHL is a different league than the NHL, not only when it comes to pace, not only comes to the speed of the game and the skill and everything else, but there is still a bit more of an old school mentality in the AHL. There are still enforcers in the AHL. There's still, you know, the physical element there. And, you know, Rob Ramage, I think, said it great where he said, you know, for some players it's great, but for other players, you don't want them to go down there and dumb down their game. Yeah. And, you know, I think that was probably a little insulting to AHL players, but still the spirit of it rings true in that, you know, the style of game in the AHL is not necessarily all that made for everyone. It's not made for every type of player. And you might look at Slafkovský and say, oh, he's so big and strong and he should be fine, but he's a skilled player. He just happens to be in a huge body, which is what makes him so appealing. And the fact that this debate is going on also speaks to what makes Slafkovský appealing to the Canadians, is that he has the personality to shrug it off. He is the person who is the least concerned with his own future, is him, other than wanting to stay where he is, you know? And so, and he's totally been able to handle this, seemingly at least, like a champ, you know? I mean, the body language, everything about him just speaks to how much he's enjoying this and how much he's learning from it. So, but yeah, there is that about the AHL, is that it's quote unquote a dumbed down league in the sense that it's not, you know, it's not for everyone. If you're not maybe, if you have certain specific things to work on, maybe you could do that in the AHL, but, you know, it doesn't necessarily translate to NHL success. And the other thing that I want to bring up is that the reason why this is we're talking about this so much with Juraj Slafkovský, including you and I right now, is that he's the number one overall pick. And, you know, you don't want to ruin that. And if you just think back to Jack Hughes's rookie season, obviously not the same player at all. Much higher profile, Jack Hughes, frankly, because, you know, it's not as if anyone looked at Juraj Slafkovský and was picked first overall and say, oh, here's a franchise player that they just drafted. Everyone kind of agrees that there was no franchise player available in this draft Canadians decided that Yaroslav Koski was going to be their pick. But Jack Hughes, franchise player, you know, it comes up, has a very difficult rookie season, looks out of place, looks overmatched, you know, 21 points in 61 games, minus 26 by the end of the year. The Devils did not send him to the AHL once. They said, you're going to get through it. The next year, a little bit better, 31 points, 56 games, only a dash three at the end of the year. But again, not a single game in the AHL. Third season, boom, explodes, 26 goals in 49 games. And then obviously this season, you see what's going on. He's basically a full-blown superstar now. So it's okay to not put up points in the NHL as long as you're learning the things that will be necessary to eventually put up points. And I think Slafkovsky's doing that. And I think the coaching staff the Canadiens have, in particular Martin St. Louis, is helping him do that. And all the resources they have is helping him do that. And the teammates he has is helping him do that. So I think he would probably benefit from people just kind of letting him breathe a little and let him just kind of play. And as long as he looks like he does right now, which he's not producing, but he also doesn't look out of place. You don't watch Yari Slavkovsky play in the NHL and say, oh, that guy does not look like an NHL player. On the contrary, I watch him play. It's pretty clear to me, at least, that he's an NHL player. There's no reason for him not to be in the NHL other than all these other considerations, him being a first overall pick, him being 18, him being so important to the future of the franchise. But if you just look at him objectively compared to all the other players on the ice, he does not stand out in a good or a bad way. You know, you'd like for him to stand out in a good way, but the fact that he doesn't stand out in a bad way is also kind of a positive. Like, he's at 18 years old, he's keeping up in the NHL. He's not simply surviving, like Dom Ducharme loved to say. He's playing. He's not setting the world on fire, but he's playing. And I think it would be good to just let him play.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
All right. Well, I think we've covered all bases when it comes to that. But let's talk about another younger player who could likely be sent down to the American League, and he's in an entirely different situation, but it equally interesting in terms of how the organization goes about developing his younger players, and that's Barron. I mean, Barron's been, you know, he's been called up, you know, right after Christmas, played a couple of games, but he's been scratched. He's been scratched lately. I think that tonight will be, what, his third game in a row?
His third in a row. Yeah, third in a row. And so,
Well,
this comes back to picking a lane. You know, I mean, this is really, this is not good.
Well, I mean, you cannot, if he's going to be your seventh defenseman, well, there are guys like Corey Schooneman in Laval or other guys that could serve that purpose and be your insurance policy. That's the first. I mean, this morning, Martin St. Louis, you know, it's for us right now, it's a tough time to make changes on defense because we're finding ourselves on defense. Uh-huh. So they're already invested into all those rookies. That's minus Caden Gooley, who's out for 2 months. But still, they've gone through that process of trying to make the younger defensemen better as the season goes on and deal with weather the storm, and it was a heck of a storm lately, but you include Justin Barron into the mix, they could. They could choose to do that. I mean, he's a guy who's got interesting tools. He's only 20. Is he still 21 or he might have turned 22, but he's still a young player.
He's 21. He turned 21 in November. Yeah.
Man, he's shockingly young. Yeah. So I think that there's also a virtue in showing patience with this kid too. But the question needs to be raised also when you mentioned picking a lane, they would decide not to play Barron and play Chris Weidman instead. I mean, Chris Weidman is a good guy. Everybody likes him. He's a funny dude. He's proven to be a very good teammate, and he's really, guys, their faces light up when the name Chris Weidman is mentioned. I think that, and I'm honestly a bit surprised by that because he came to Montreal with such a middling reputation when it came to his off-ice reputation. So I think that it's been really good. But when you look at on the ice,
there's no reason for Chris Weidman to be playing over Justin Barron. Let's just cut to the chase. It's just like there's no good reason.
Because if Chris Weidman is not an effective guy on your power play, which he hasn't been, I mean, he's only had 4 points since the beginning of the season. And we know that at 5-on-5, he's pretty much a liability. Well, then you could get the same from Justin Barron. The mistakes might be more glaring because he's younger, and you'll say, well, he shows that he's not ready. But a mistake from a 30-year-old or a mistake from a 21-year-old is still a mistake.
Well, I mean, I guess the one thing I would say is that, like, Chris Weidman on Saturday, for instance, played 9 minutes and 5 seconds. He got 14 shifts, not a second on either special teams, all at 5-on-5. Maybe not having Barron do that is the thought process, although I don't see why that would be somehow worse than not playing at all. But it's kind of baffling to me because it's not as if the Canadiens have not dressed four rookies on defense. They did it for the majority of the season. So having Barron, Jack Eye, Kovacevic, and Harris, when you've gone with Gouley, Jack Eye, Kovacevic, and Harris for the bulk of the year, is not really a reason. I mean, you know, St. Louis saying that I don't really want to mess with my defense right now is fair in the sense that he's called his team fragile several times over the course of that losing streak. Not wanting to mess with that fragility is one thing. Though he is bringing Mike Hoffman back into the lineup tonight for Anthony Richard. So he is messing with it, just not forward. But it makes no sense to me why. And they have kind of set a precedent in the sense that, you know, Chris Weidman was clearly established as the seventh defenseman on this team because, you know, when they weren't even fully healthy, but, you know, when you know, those four rookies played ahead of Chris Weidman on many occasions. So this one instance I find strange. This is really a situation where letting Barron sit for three games, even though St. Louis' explanation was fine, letting Barron sit for three games in a row doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me, especially when the alternative is Chris Weidman. I just don't get it.
In both cases, you're talking about a right-handed third-pairing defenseman, which is what Weidman is and what Barron is at this point in his career anyway. And when St. Louis says it's tough to make changes because we're finding ourselves on defense, I don't think that he's talking specifically about Weidman. I think it's really a lot more of a team concept and the fact that the team as a whole is figuring some stuff out.
Well, I think this is also, again, goes back to what I said earlier. I think Marte St. Louis learning as a coach, like this is an opportunity to not allow results to govern your decisions. This sounds to me like a results-based decision. Oh, we won a game.
And we played well against the Rangers. So I don't want to mess with things. You know, we're trying to find our game defensively. So, and in our D zone. So I don't want to mess with things. You know, I've always hated that. I've always kind of hated, you don't touch a winning lineup kind of thing. But even though you see that there are problem areas in that lineup, Chris Weidman's a problem area in the lineup right now. He's barely playing. When he does, he often looks overmatched in his own end. He's not really having an impact offensively, doesn't play on the power play. There's no benefit to having him in the lineup, especially when you have a promising young defenseman that you're invested in and that you anticipate having as part of your future sitting on the roster. It just makes no sense. But so that's where picking a lane, this is the wrong lane that they've chosen. And either Barron will play on Thursday or he'll be sent down, I'm sure. If he's not playing on Thursday, I'm sure he'll be sent down well before then. But I just don't see why they would send him down. I think they should get him in the lineup as soon as possible and just play him and sit Weidman. It makes no sense to me.
He scored 5 goals on the power play with the Rocket earlier this season. So he has emerged down there.
Looked good last season on the power play in the NHL.
Yeah. Yeah.
For Martin St. Louis.
Because I know that it's been a big talking point about the fact that the Canadians have been using a lot, very often, 5 forwards on their top unit. So they've got a forward working the blue line, and whether it be Doc at times, there's been Hoffman, Drouin, et cetera, et cetera. Do you think that the team would benefit from having Barron there instead of a forward? And to which extent is this an issue to have 5 forwards on your first unit? Because last time I checked, the Canadians gave up their first goal against, like, in their power play goal against of the season the other night. And before that, even though you could say, well, it's risky on the counter attack, it's risky from a defensive point of view to have a forward playing the blue line, it had not bit them at that point. And the day that it did happen, and it was on a Chris Kreider goal, shorthanded.
It was a defenseman.
I mean, Arber Jackie was actually the guy on the blue line. It was not a forward. So, but do you think that the Canadians should stick with the 5 forwards, or it would be a good opportunity to give Justin Barron a look there and say, well, let's, you know, show us what you can do?
Well, I think I have no problem with 5 forwards on the top unit. You know, you could put Barron at the top of the second unit the way Jackie was in that situation that you just described, the way Gouley's been used sparingly over the course of the season. Or Weidman could go there. I mean, I actually like the theory of having 5 forwards on the power play. I like the idea that we're going out there to score. We're not gonna shape our power play unit based on the fear of giving up a goal. We're going to build our power play unit with the intention to score. And that's something that Marte St. Louis actually said earlier this season. Because he not only is 5 forwards on the power play, he often goes 6 forwards when they pull their goalie at the end of a game.
That's true.
And same mentality. You know, I like that mentality. It hasn't produced results, but the mentality, I think, is healthy. You know, we're not going to worry about giving up shorthanded goals because we're going to go out there and score. It's a confident mentality. I like it. I why not put your best offensive players? And the Canadians don't have a great offensive defense. Listen, Justin Barron has the tools to become a good offensive defenseman at some point in his career, perhaps, but he's not that now. They don't have Cale Makar. They don't have an Erik Karlsson. They don't have guys, Adam Fox. They don't have guys that you can justify as being one of your top 5 offensive players on the blue line. So, with that being the case, absolutely put 5 forwards on there. I don't care. It's fine. It's and even if Justin Barron's not playing on the power play, he should be playing over Chris Weidman. I really cannot stress this enough. It just makes no sense to me whatsoever how Chris Weidman, not on the power play, not on the penalty kill, is still getting played over Justin Barron. But
Yeah.
But that's, I think this is going to be a temporary situation, and eventually this will right itself, but it just remains a little bit baffling. And I think this is, but this as an overarching thing, these three games that Barron has missed does go back to what I feel like the midseason reflection should be. Like, what is this season about? Ken Hughes said it at the beginning of the year, he's repeated it every time he's been asked, it's a development year. So a situation like the one here is a bit reflective of the difficulty of trying to have a development year and also have a competitive year all at the same time. Sometimes you just gotta pick one or the other, go development and then try to compete while keeping development as the priority, which is what Ken Hughes said the team would do. And right now with Barron, that's clearly not happening.
Also, the another issue with that, and you used earlier in the podcast, you used the word mishmash trying to describe the current roster. And I feel as though since the very beginning, it's been a little bit awkward the way that the actual roster is built, because you have those younger players that you try to develop and say identify as your future. You got a few guys that are sort of in between, but you have a whole set of forwards and a couple of defensemen that must realize that they're not really part of the future, and they're there now, but they're placeholders to various degrees, and trying to coordinate all these guys into a similar project, a similar program, becomes very difficult, because it's no wonder that it's hard to pick a lane where you have guys that are in such different places, one in their career, but two in terms of what they can do for the actual team right now. So what's good, you know, if you choose to keep on playing Hoffman, Dadonov, Weidman, et cetera, even guys that, you know, that not necessarily bad players, but you could say, if I could attract some, gain some value out of those guys, you know, the Armias, the name them.
Drouins.
Exactly. So yeah. All those guys, if what you choose to invest in them, all the efforts into trying to realign them into becoming better players or bolstering their value, it can be done at the expense of younger players. Just like when you said that when you mentioned the fact that Slafkovský could skip a shift here and there for offensive purposes and he would be replaced by Drouin. So to me, I won't use the word dysfunctional because it has not been that bad. But to me, there's always been that risk since the beginning of the season that because there's an imbalance in the roster, that there is a threat that it could become dysfunctional. And at some point, this needs to be resolved. Some of it will be resolved by itself just by the effect of guys becoming UFAs, but still, they're not all going to vanish at the end of the season. This is still going to be an issue next season. But how are they going to tackle that? The Justin Barron is a great example of saying, well, how can we push that situation forward and try to get out of that? Because either you play the kids and say, well, it's straight on, it's full on development, or you play your veteran and say, okay, let's try to maximize their value and get whatever we can at the deadline, and we'll go back to the kids after the trade deadline. But it's neither this or that since the beginning of the season.
Yeah. Yeah, agreed. That is another kind of pick your lane situation. But it's, you know, I think what it shows is that Martin Saint-Louis has been given a decent amount of autonomy. I think that there is a group element to all the decisions that are made. I think management is involved in some of Martin Saint-Louis' decisions, but they're ultimately left up to him. And the one thing that I think a lot of people, ourselves included, tend to not forget, but tend to discount the importance of, is that the players on the team are trying to win games. And no matter all the other considerations that we've just spent this entire podcast talking about, ultimately that's what matters to them. And Martin Saint-Louis has to manage that as well. So this is why they've gone down this multiple lane season, is that to solely devote it to development while not worrying about competitiveness would be a disservice and might be damaging to the players who are only concerned about winning the next game. Mm-hmm. And that is at the crux of a lot of decisions, you know, like, you know, just take for, let's just go back. We can kind of close on this, but like, let's just go back to the whole notion of Slafkovský skipping that shift. They're protecting a one goal, or no, it's a tie game at that point. Third period, you know, he's trying to, in Martin St. Louis' mind, he's not thinking about Juraj Slafkovský's development. And if you think he should be, that's fair. That's a fair opinion to have. And I would argue that, yeah, that should be in the back of his mind. But to him, he's managing a game situation and trying to get his team a badly needed win, in the sense that not make or break for the playoffs, but for the team's psyche and for their general sense of well-being and self-worth, they needed that win on Saturday. And so he's going to make decisions that he thinks will get them that win. And frankly, that decision worked. They scored. Joy went out with those guys, and they got a goal out of it. Largely because of the work that Drouin did on that shift. So, you know, it's hard to criticize that decision when it produced a victory for a group of men who needed that. It's hard to criticize that because it came at the expense of Juraj Slafkovský getting one shift in a high leverage situation, especially since he was back out there on his line the very next shift.
And he must have been just as happy as the other guys that the team finally won a game,
if not more so, because he's because he's a kid, you know, and it's because he's excited about this whole thing and that whole. So, yeah, it's so when I said at the beginning the Canadiens need to pick a lane, it's not as simple as that. I still think they need to do that, and I think the Barron situation reflects that. But it's never black or white. It's never as simple as that. There are other considerations in play, and Martin St. Louis is a rookie head coach who's trying to juggle all these balls and sort of keep everyone as happy as he can, while still having to scratch, you know, Mike Hoffman, you know, Dadonov and Armia were scratched in Nashville. They come back into the lineup against the Rangers, where two of the Canadiens' best players, against the Blues, where two of the Canadiens' best players again were on the ice in the final minute protecting a one-goal lead. You know, Armia blocks a shot, his stick breaks, he's kicking the puck out of the zone, he's doing anything. You know, it's things change.
Their line had the second rotation this morning at the morning skate, you know? So, I mean, for now, it's symbolic, but... Yes, you're slotted as the second line right now.
Right. So it's like, it's, you know, so, and ask Marte St. Louis about, like, you know, don't you find it's kind of random when you find a line combination that works? And what he should have said, and I actually told him this after the press conference, I said the right answer would have been, no, that's brilliant coaching. But he agreed. He said, yeah, sometimes it is random. Sometimes you throw some guys together just based on circumstances. In this case, Dadonov and Armia were coming back in the lineup. He thought they should play together as a result. They needed a center. Jake Evans happened to be that center. And they've been a great line for two straight games. So it's kind of random. But these are the ebbs and flows of a season, and Juraj Slafkovský is experiencing all of it. And even Justin Barron's experiencing this. While I don't think it's a good thing, and frankly, I think it's kind of dumb, it's another experience in his toolbox. You know, Arbor Jacki is experiencing all this stuff for the first time. It's all beneficial. So it's just important to, I think, remember why, if the Canadiens haven't picked a lane, which I think they should, but the reason they haven't is because they have a lot of these considerations that they're trying to satisfy all at once.
So I think that pick a lane should be the title of this episode. It's by now it seems rather clear.
Pick a lane. Oh, yeah. Pick a lane, yeah, and build a foundation and all that stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, listen, everybody, if you have a question for Arpan and I, Yeah, we haven't done a really good job at reminding you to do so, but we have a voicemail, and you can leave a message on our voicemail and just, you know, ask a question, and we'll be happy to play it on the pod and discuss it, debate it, answer your questions or your comments. So feel free to do so. You can call us at 646-847-9404, 646-847-9404. So please don't be shy. We'll be happy to oblige. So there you go.
And also, just a reminder that if you have not yet subscribed to The Athletic, even though our end of year sale just ended, you can always, always, always get a discount on your first year subscription to The Athletic at theathletic.com/athletic support.
Yes, that's good. All right, so we'll be back on Friday with Le Super Athletic in French, the day after PK Subban's homecoming at the Bell Center. So that'll be interesting. Until then, Arpin, everybody, have a good week.